to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by My Sportswear, Youth Energy and Save Association. I'm your host, Stel, and joining me is undoubtedly the bravest guest I've ever had on the show. He is a survivor of CSA, otherwise known as childhood sexual abuse, and recently attempted a 70-mile walk in Lancashire to raise £1,000 for the charity. It is my pleasure to introduce Ambassador for Voicing CSA, David Lean. David, welcome to Shoot the Defence, mate. Great to have you on the show.
Hi, yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. How are your feet?
Sore. Didn't quite go according to plan. I was hoping, my fitness level's fine. There was no issues there, but the weather was probably just about the wettest July day in history, I think, in Blackpool. So, set off all good intentions. Weather wasn't particularly great, but 7 o'clock Friday night. Got to about 3:30. In the morning on the Saturday, it was still raining, and it was pouring, which caused a lot of friction. My socks were absolutely soaking wet through, and ended up getting huge blisters on both feet, all around different areas of the feet. So, unfortunately, I got to almost 10 o'clock in the morning, and had to call it a day. So, I'm a little bit short of my target time, but I'm very determined, and certainly not going to let down the people that have sponsored me. So I'm going to continue and do the other 9 hours this Saturday.
That's fantastic. That's brilliant. I mean, Dave, congratulations on the work you've done creating awareness for CSA, mate. I mean, tell us about the walk itself, because you mentioned you've got 9 hours to go. It isn't a distance walk, is it? It's about duration. Is that right?
It's a bit of both. Obviously, a little target in there. I would have liked to have done the sort of 3 miles an hour and tried to get to 72 miles. That would have been nice, but you know, I wasn't sure what was going to happen on the Saturday, because the plan is to be walking from Lytham all the way through to the far side of Blackpool and back down to Lytham, just up and down the promenade, and you know, with helium balloons attached to me and a t-shirt that basically says survivor of childhood abuse, I'm trying to draw awareness to myself and then obviously awareness to childhood sexual abuse. You know, going down the prom in Blackpool on a busy Saturday, there's nowhere to hide. And, you know, it's not really about me talking to other survivors now. You know, I'm really pleased and comfortable talking to other survivors and trying to help and support where I can. But ideally, I want to get to the untapped. I want to get to, you know, I want kids to see me. I want the parents to see me. I want anybody out there who, you know, while I'm walking, because I will be walking through Blackpool this Saturday, to come up, you know, say hello, ask me any questions. If that means I have to stop, and it's not, you know, it's not a problem. I'll talk to anybody and give anybody, you know, any support that I can. It's purely now for me about raising awareness, because this is the unspoken subject. Nobody wants to talk about it. It's hidden away. 90% of people who are sexually abused as a child are abused by somebody that they know or a family member. And, you know, when you start looking at those stats, this is not the sort of shady guy with a Mac hidden away somewhere who doesn't know the family. That's maybe 10% of what we're talking about. These are family members, which is just unbelievable to imagine, but these are family members and people who wormed their way into the family environment, close friends, people from local, obviously, churches, scout groups, youth clubs, football coaches, you know, the whole spectrum. And it's just, it is now, it's enlightened me over the last few years of the scale and the size of this. And, you know, you start talking about maybe as many as 3 children in every class, in every school, have been sexually abused. Still. And, you know, it's enormous, and I just want to do what I can to help, really. And the football thing has sort of given me a little bit of a platform to be able to speak that perhaps maybe this is what it's needed a little bit. Maybe, you know, some people who prepared to speak, and obviously there's not been a huge amount of men in the past that will do that either, because of the sort of shame and embarrassment side of things, and it's sort of getting over that, and then being there to try to say, look, you know, I'm a normal guy. I was from a loved family. I couldn't have had better parents growing up. They watched my every move. My dad came to all my football sessions. They wanted to know exactly where I was, when I was. But this guy was he was an expert. I would say he was a professional groomer. And ultimately, he groomed me. He worked his way through to my, you know, got very pally with my parents. And he was a nice guy. And as such, the trust is there, the power is there, the influence is there, and you are sucked into that. And it is so easy to get sucked into that. And, you know, I don't blame my parents for one bit for that. You know, I've never had any... The blame has always been with him. But it is there, and it's about opening people's eyes and saying, look, be aware, just be careful. Look for the signs. Look at your children, how they're reacting. Because obviously, you know, the signs are there. And many, many occasions, these people change. They become withdrawn. They spend time on their own. They might become, you know, a little bit moody. They might become withdrawn. There's lots and lots of different signs that can be there. And if somebody's wanting to hang around and spend more time around your child, you know, it's those sort of things that you need to be aware of.
Absolutely. It's scary, isn't it? I mean, I saw a link on your Twitter page earlier today where it said 1 in 35 men have paedophile tendencies. I mean, that is... And that's from the National Crime Agency as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I saw that for the first time myself. I'd heard figures similar, but I hadn't heard it quite as strong as that today. And obviously, when I saw that, it was a case to get that back out there. You know, 1 in 35, and when we talk about, like I said, three children possibly, 1 in 10, 1 in 12. Some people have it even lower than that. You know, I'm at the top end of the spectrum. There's people out there saying it's 1 in 6. You know, but it's from my side of things, it's realistically 3 children in every class in every school. And if you know, you've heard these expressions that if they had a scar on the head or something that sort of was a visual, There'd be an outcry.
Yeah.
But because these people, you know, are hidden away, nobody knows what's going on, and it's just the unspoken subject. You know, I put things on Twitter, and I've got a lot of survivor friends on Twitter, and they retweet and stuff. But, you know, a lot of my personal friends are on my Facebook page, and, you know, I put stuff on to do with CSA on that, and there's very, very few going anywhere near it.
Yeah.
You know, there's very, very few people... I did some charity awareness for cancer a few years ago after my mum passed away. And I ran a marathon for cancer, and everybody was banging a fiver in, a tenner in. And I started doing stuff for CSA, and it's a completely different ballgame.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I was contributing my own money for people to send a tweet to me saying I'm raising awareness of childhood sexual abuse.
Wow.
So it would go on their Twitter page. And I said, everybody who does it, I'll give a penny, and then I increased it to 5p. And it was just survivors, you know, and it was just the same for your people. And all I wanted people to do was put, I'm raising awareness of childhood sexual abuse, and I was going to donate, you know, and I put that out many, many times. People won't go near the stuff. And it's, you know, it's a subject, and I get it's a difficult subject. But while it stays a difficult subject, we're helping the paedophiles. Because that's what they want. They want it hidden away. They want it quiet. They want to work their way in. They don't want people like me and all these other people that are coming out now sort of banging the drum and saying, be aware, and keep your eyes open. And, you know, they don't want that. So we're helping them by staying quiet.
Absolutely. No, you're right, mate. You're right. Well, you ran the Liverpool Half Marathon in May for the same cause, and you raised about £3,000 in the process, which is absolutely fantastic. Were your preparations different for that run compared to Saturday's?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Saturday's was completely, really unprepared. I mean, I broke my footwear in, there was no new shoes or anything like that, but in relation to, I've got a dog, so I do quite a lot of dog walking. I've done a few good 10-mile, 12-mile walks. But it's very difficult unless you are very, very dedicated to go and sort of walk overnight through the night a couple of times on training walks. I'm relatively fit anyway. I did a marathon, in Manchester Marathon, for CSA awareness and counselling funding for CSA. Like you mentioned, I did the Liverpool half. I also did the Blackpool half. And I do a fair amount of jogging because, if I'm honest, it helps my sort of, you know, keep myself focused.
Yeah.
So I try and do a little bit of jogging a few times a week and just keep my head channeled and where it needs to be. So, yeah, it was a little bit different. I wouldn't say I really prepared, if I'm honest, too much for the walk, other than doing sort of quite a few, like I say, 10-mile walks with the dog and stuff. So the dog's appreciated it, I think, probably more than I have.
But you feed him well, though.
Yeah, no, he's a lovely little dog. So, no, he's benefiting. And yeah. I think the support, you know, from my family, I mean, you know, I'm lucky. I've got a few brothers that have been fantastic with me. My wife now, when all this started, for me, the first person I disclosed to in 2013 was the police. I came straight home from the police station and told my fiancée. And she's been absolutely unbelievable in relation to my support. And like now, I spend an awful lot of time on Twitter and raising awareness and trying to think of new ideas. We did a Twitter trend. We've done that a couple of times now where we've sort of isolated a half-hour slot or an hour slot, and we've got people to all tweet at the same time, hashtag CSA Survivors, and then whatever added on that they want to put, whatever added message. And we've actually trended on Twitter a couple of times now as well, which
that's amazing.
It's just another way of trying to reach the people we need to reach. Obviously, there's a lot of teenagers and younger guys now on Twitter. So, you know, if we can get the message out, we want to get it out through ways that we can. I mean, I'm speaking personally to Victim Support, Lancashire Victim Support. I want to go and try and help make their staff aware, but also see if I can, you know, go into some of the schools. It's no good just sitting on the internet and just banging your drum on the internet. I've got to get down now and start trying to work my way into the areas, you know. And I'm a professional guy. I've worked in the association. I've worked for 34 years. I'm a senior manager in leisure. I work for a charity, and, you know, I want to try and help. But I've obviously got a full-time job. So I do as much as I can when I can to raise awareness.
That's great stuff, mate. Fantastic. Long may it continue. Long may it continue.
Thank you.
For our listeners who aren't aware, David successfully achieved a conviction against a football coach. Now, you've kept this a secret. As you said, you told the police in 2013. Now, it originally happened in 1980, I believe. So you're talking about, well, over three decades. Now, forgive me if you've already answered this question on many occasions, but why did you keep it hush for so long?
There's lots of reasons. There's not one reason. I was, in the initial stages, immediately shocked, scared, frightened, embarrassed. I had no idea what happened to me. And sort of didn't understand it, really. And to me, what had happened was sort of questioning my own sexuality. I had two older brothers who were sort of quite popular around town, and it was embarrassing. And comments that happened later on then, a few years later, my mum actually said to me that when press came on about him, she talked about, you know, did anything happen to me when I stayed, and I said no, and she passed the comments that she's not sure how she would have coped, and if she could have coped if it had.
Right.
And once she said those words, I made a sort of promise to myself that I would never disclose while she was alive. She passed away in January 2013 after a long fight with cancer, and 5 days after the funeral, I walked into a police station.
So that was obviously a huge leap for you. a massive step in your life. And you know, when you're telling me about how you felt people may have perceived you, or you know, as you said, you question your sexuality and whatnot, do you think that is one of the reasons why others haven't spoken out about their own experiences, because of the way that they may be perceived or the way they may be judged?
I think it's something like 26 years, I think, is the norm for an adult male disclosing. Whereas women, I think it's something like eight years. I think it's a man thing. It took me a long time to get to a position where you feel more comfortable to speak about it. Yeah. You know, a lot of people will remember for the rest of their lives their first intimate sexual sort of act. You know, when you suffer from childhood sexual abuse, the first time you suffer a sexual experience is at the hands of your abuser. Yeah. And that's what you ultimately then, you know, is your first experience. And, you know, you got to remember, I wasn't a kid of 4, 3, 5, you know, the ages that, you know, children are abused from birth. And I can clearly remember the abuse towards myself. And, you know, I was 12 years old at the time. So there's lots of reasons, you know, and you go through stages in your life, or you meet a new partner, you know, or you have your children. And it's very difficult to ever get to that stage where, you know, you're feeling comfortable, and that will hit different people at different stages. Mm-hmm. I don't think there is ever a right time. The right time has to be the right time for you.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, it's where you are in your life, I think.
Yeah. And I presume the people that you've spoken to have pretty much said the same sort of thing. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, there's people that have done exactly a similar type of thing to me and waited for parents to disclose. I mean, I would have, in a way, I would have preferred to have waited for my dad to pass, but I needed my dad. And had my dad have passed away before my mum, you know, I might never have been where I am in relation to him being convicted, because my dad could pitch, you know, he placed me where I was, and he had some key evidence. So, ultimately, you know, my dad on his deathbed in Blackpool Victoria Hospital 2 days before he died is apologising to me, which is, well, you know, it still goes straight down me now. You know, it's a really difficult experience to sort of talk about. He's there apologising as he's dying. So, you know, it was never his fault, and obviously I reassured him that. But it is difficult, and I think it can only be when you are ready.
No, absolutely. No, I understand. And I appreciate you being very open about this. Tell us about the Crown Prosecution Service, because you got them to change the procedures, didn't you? I know you had a few obstacles when it came to the police. How did you overcome them?
It's quite a long story, but obviously I'll cut it as brief as I can. The bottom line is, when I first went to the police, the words public interest were never mentioned. I didn't even know what public interest was, if I'm honest. I've never been near a police station or a courtroom in my life. And it was only after I think I'd done my videotaped evidence that there was this mention of these words, public interest. And I'll be honest, I brushed it straight off, because I thought, well, this is in the public interest. You know, a paedophile is in the public interest. So, as far as I'm concerned, if I ask 100 people out on the street now, if there's a paedophile, would you want him in prison? All 100 would say yes. So, that's in the public interest, as far as I'm concerned. Public interest, in many cases, bottom line is, it relates to money. And they're basically saying it's, you know, 20-odd, 30,000 to put someone in prison for a year, and it's 10,000 a day for Crown Court. And, you know, forget the fact that they're a criminal. At the end of the day, this is what it's going to cost the taxpayer. And, you know, it went to, eventually the evidence was compiled, it went to the CPS, and they sent me a letter that basically weren't going to take the case forward. It was dropped on public interest reasons, because bottom line is they didn't think if I'd have come forward years earlier with some other boys that it perhaps would have added any weight to the sentence, and as such they didn't think it would be in the public interest to open it back up. I was heartbroken, devastated, annoyed, and at this stage had disclosed to family members and loved ones, and gone through pretty much by that stage about 6 months of hell. And I'm quite a stubborn, determined type of guy, and I just thought, well, it's wrong. Ultimately, you know, he's wrong. He's a paedophile. And they believed me. They're saying the evidence is there, and they believed I was a credible witness, but they just didn't think it was in the public interest to put him back. Mm-hmm. So I, for a long story short, I then went to an appeal procedure, which was through what they call National Childhood Sexual Review Panel, which had literally been formed a few days before my decision, and I was their test case, basically, which is, there was sort of the head of the CPS on that committee, there was a head of police and a couple of other people from agencies. They discussed it. Couldn't make their mind up, told me it would then go to another meeting where they would, in the meantime, be asking agencies and people's opinions and what have you. I found out then pretty much 12 months after I'd walked into the police station, it was almost 12 months to the day that I'd walked in the police station, that due to my case, they were ultimately going to change the guidance in favour of prosecution in cases such as mine, and where a nominal sentence may be the likely outcome. So they were going to change the... they thought that justice should be served in cases like mine, and they were going to advise the CPS. This panel hasn't got the authority to actually recharge or do anything to do with the charge. All they can do is go back to the CPS and say there's new guidance been brought in, and in relation to the new guidance that's been brought in, we want you to relook at the case. That happened. The CPS then relooked at the case with the new guidance in mind, and obviously he was then charged and 12 months later finally convicted.
So what advice would you give anyone, young or old, who has suffered CSA?
What advice? First of all, you need some support. Now, support can come in different ways, obviously depending on how the individuals are. But some people may need very much professional support through counselling services. And, you know, that isn't easy to get to, which is hence the reason why, you know, I've raised over the three grand for the Renaissance charity in Blackpool to help provide the counselling services. But it's difficult. A loved one, a close friend, somebody that you can speak to. There are survivors groups out there. There's lots of people now on Twitter. There's lots of people who are prepared to, you know, to speak to you and try and support you through. It helps me personally, mm-hmm. by talking about it, to go to the Voicing CSA meetings, to get up on a stage, but obviously not everybody's like me. Some people, you know, they like to listen to the music a lot, like to do exercise and sports and you know, keep their minds channeled. But ultimately, once I found personally, once I disclosed, it opened up the sort of floodgates. I find it difficult almost to stop now, which you've probably found to be the case during this interview, if I'm honest. But, you know, once I'm on it, I'm sort of on it, and I'm very passionate about it. And, you know, I just want to sort of talk about it and help. Others are completely different. They find it very difficult, and that's fine. You know, everybody has their own level. a lot of people will never ever go public. They would maybe tell a few close friends, or but you know they would never do that. But the way I'm looking at this is, if there's any change going to be made to the justice service, to the sentencing laws, to the way that survivors are treated, to the speed, you know, you're averaging around 2 years for historic cases from going to police to getting into the courtroom. It can be 12 months to get a Crown Court date. You know, these people are going through hell for 2 years, and the services, you know, I mean, police would admit that on many, many occasions they've got that much crime to deal with that the historic stuff and the non-recent is just put on the back burner. And as long as that you know, they're not considering the offender to perhaps be a current, shall we say, safeguarding issue, these things can drag on. And, you know, 18 months to 2 years is not uncommon at all, which, you know, is an incredible amount of time when you're the person who's disclosed and you are going through hell. And, you know, unless you've been in that situation, people maybe listening won't understand, but you are waiting. I waited for 5 months for someone to eventually say, yeah, we're going to charge him, or we're not going to charge him in my case. You know, it's incredible. Those decisions should be happening in weeks, but there's just not the police manpower to press on.
It's scary. It really is scary. Being a father myself, it's something that you wouldn't want to ever happen to your child. It really is scary. And again, I cannot. I'm actually lost for words talking to you about this kind of thing, because I admire your bravery. I admire everything that you're going through, and the fact that you're so confident and comfortable discussing it with people such as myself, who obviously I would say naive. I would say I'm quite naive about this, because obviously I'm very uneducated when it comes to it. I don't know much about it. It's people such as yourself and the guys at Safe Association who are actually bringing it to people's attention. And I'd like to thank you, you know, from the bottom of my heart, mate. But let's talk a bit about the upcoming Premier League season and Liverpool Football Club, who I believe you have a vested interest in. Are you confident?
In my younger days, I took my son quite a lot to go and watch Liverpool. We went, you know, we travelled around a bit and went to quite a few games and stuff. Not been as much as I wanted recently, if I'm honest. So we, you know, we've tended to go. We watch a bit of non-league. I've watched a bit of AFC Fylde. We go to Preston, Wigan, just places where it's easy to pick up tickets as well, if I'm honest. But you know, I'm a confident. How can you be confident with the most inconsistent club in the country? I mean, what, 1 minute we're future champions. There's no doubt about that. The standard of football, the sort of skill within the team. And the next minute, they sort of lose 1-0 at home to Stoke or somebody. So, you know, I wouldn't say we're going to win the league next year, but I'd like to think there's a, you know, we're going to continue to improve and obviously play good football. So it would be nice, but there's a bit of quality out there. I think, you know, Chelsea and United are strong again. So, and obviously Tottenham, we'll see.
Well, Klopp was saying that he's happy that no one has actually left the club, and you've signed Robertson, the left back from Hull City, so there's that side of the defence sorted. Where do you think else you need to strengthen? Because you brought Salah in as well. Do you need another striker?
Well, I mean, obviously, Ings has never really come to the forefront yet because he's just been injured.
Yeah.
And obviously, Sturridge is Sturridge. I mean, 1 minute he's fine. And so, you know, if those two are firing on all cylinders, and, you know, Coutinho, and we've got it there if they stay fit. But obviously there's a lot of football this season, Champions League, etc. Hopefully they'll have a good run, so we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, as a Man United fan, I'd like to wish you luck, but I'm not going to do that.
I wouldn't do the interview now if I knew you were a United fan, to be honest with you. You never mentioned that, so.
Sorry, mate. Well, mate, listen, on a final note, you're an ambassador for the charity Voicing CSA, and you also work closely with Safe Association. Tell us about Voicing CSA and how it supports CSA survivors.
Yeah, there's a gentleman called Phil Lafferty who's basically he's an outstanding gentleman. He's a lovely, lovely bloke, and he contacted me earlier this year. he caught wind of, I suppose, who I was, and was just interested in whether I would come down and tell my story. It's the first time I'd ever spoke publicly in front of a group about this. So it was an opportunity for me to sort of go and do that. And I went down, and those events are, it's difficult to describe. They're just inspiring. There's maybe 10 or 12 survivors go up and either tell their full story or aspects of their story, or they talk about issues within the CSA environment, whether that be their judicial system or, you know, how they were treated or whatever. And it's just inspiring. And I thought, you know, this is something that if I can support in any way and help, and you know, Phil afterwards, for whatever reasons, you'd have to ask Phil, ask me whether I would be interested in becoming an ambassador. And to be honest, I jumped at it. I've seen people breaking down on those, you know, when they're telling their stories and people in the audience breaking down, and afterwards they feel that the power that's given them and the fact that they've managed to speak out for the first time has helped them. And, you know, I've seen the posts on Twitter from people and had comments from people at the breaks and the end of the days where, you know, people have just found it sort of inspiring and so helpful. You know, to them as an individual, and obviously, you know, if you can go to a meeting like that and it helps, I don't know, two or three different people every meeting, you know, that's, for my side of things, that's a fantastic cause. So yeah, I'm all behind Voicing CSA.
Fantastic. Well, David, listen, it's been an absolute honour having you on the show, mate. I'd like to thank you and other CSA survivors for speaking up, for having the bravery to, as I said, speak up about it, for being people to look up to. And it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, mate. I really hope that this thing works out for you guys. And the more people are educated on this, the more chance we've got of kicking this into touch, so to speak. You know, it's a difficult subject for me to even discuss, let alone you. So, again, I'd like to thank you again for your time. Really appreciate it. And, you know, tell our listeners how they can help out, you know, with you know, sponsoring you on Twitter and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it's just being receptive to the conversations, first of all. So, you know, if they come across, I'm not saying go and search me out. You know, I'm not saying go and search any survivor out, but at the end of the day, if they come across a survivor, they come across something on the telly, there's an article in the paper, you know, read the articles, look at the television, don't turn it over, you know, start to educate yourself just a little bit, start to be aware of what's going on around you. If you've got children, you know, just be conscious of the fact that these people work in areas where they can get close to children. And build relationships with children. So, you know, whether that be the scout group or your church, the music teacher, the sports teacher, you know, it's just being aware of what's going on around your children. Open up the subject, talk to your children. The NSPCC do stuff on body awareness and body safety and stuff for younger children. And it's just a case of just being educated and not turning away and, you know, talking to your kids and opening the subject, basically.
Fantastic. Well, David, thank you again ever so much for your time. What's your Twitter handle?
It's David Lino. Lino being my nickname, so it's just literally one word, David Lean Lino.
Fantastic. Well, mate, thank you ever so much again for your time, and I look forward to having you back on the show.
Okay, thank you very much for your time. Take care.
Cheers, buddy. All the best.